Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
So with me today, I've got Mark Lustig, the founder, king of all things at Origin House, and a man who's got his fingers in a few other pies now as a result of becoming a somewhat of a cannabis rock god. Mark, how's things going at the Origin House?
Yeah, things are great at Origin House. Obviously, the key for us has been the announcement of the transaction with Cresco. The shareholder vote is June 11th, so about 2 weeks from Tuesday. Obviously, we expect an extremely positive outcome, and the kind of integration planning between the two companies is probably the most impressive development within Origin House, just in terms of working together in California to bring Cresco's products to California, and also working to bring our branded products throughout North America on the Cresco platform. So it's been extremely positive.
So you're normally the big dog in the equation when it comes to bringing two companies together. How's it been to be on the acquired side rather than the acquiring side?
I don't think that we look at it that way. I know what you're getting to, but notwithstanding market capitalization, which theirs is clearly bigger than ours, it's really about philosophy and how we look at things. We had built a very strong platform in California. They had built a very strong platform in 10 other states, and in particular states like Illinois and Pennsylvania and Ohio, more recently Florida and Michigan. And so it's really more about, you know, the integration and the philosophy of how things are going to work together than who's bigger than the other. Like in our transaction, it's interesting, right? Because California is virtually all additive to Cresco. They have a cultivation facility and some licenses, but they were right at the point of trying to figure out how they were going to get distribution and ultimately more brands and on more shelves. And so unlike a lot of transactions, even in cannabis more recently, where you see, you know, overlap in certain states and certain numbers of licenses and various functions, Origin House for Cresco, I think, is very much channel and product driven, not so much license and facility driven like you see mm-hmm. in a lot of other transactions.
Okay. So I guess in baseball, there's a thinking that the best possible trade is one in which both sides think they fleece the other. It seems like this is a trade where both sides are more than happy to be bringing the other aboard, that there's a mutual respect rather than a thanks, we'll take your bits and now you can go do something else.
Absolutely. I know it sounds sometimes phony, to be honest, but in our case, it's 100% the case. You know, as I said earlier, it's completely additive, not just the channel and the brands, but even the horsepower, like the people and how Origin House did its business, or whether it was on M&A activity or capital market stuff or, you know, various licensing deals, whatever it was kind of unique in terms of how well Origin House fit with Cresco. So this was by no means a smash and grab, okay, we'll take it from here, mm-hmm. everybody out type of scenario.
You've got your fingers in a few other pies, one of which is Planet 13. That seems to be coming along really nicely. As you've grown in stature in the industry, how often do you find other groups, other deals coming at you saying, hey, Mark, would you mind just lending us a few hours a month on an advisory board or a board of directors? Like, you know, how much involvement do you actually have in those deals?
Just to be clear, it's not because I enjoy spending my time on boards or in other people's companies, to be honest. I got enough to do with Origin House and Cresco, but in many ways, the association of these various entities felt from a strategic perspective, my ability to help a company selectively, the companies that I am involved, those companies have been the benefactors in different ways of my association with multiple of them. To answer your other question about time and the number of companies reaching out to do things, you're right. It's probably been increasing since the Cresco announcement, just because someone would say, okay, I guess that means that he's moving on and doing other things. So I've had a higher frequency of those types of calls. Can you join a board? Can you take over this company? And the answer is no, because if anything, I have more work to do now as part of Cresco Origin House, but also it would have been no anyways, because until there's a company that I feel is unique or different or good for, you know, Origin House, Cresco, or myself, that I feel confident sticks out and is a winner, then it's just a no anyways, because I just have too many other things to do, and, you know, I'll leave it at that.
There is a lot of more of the same flowing around out there these days. You know, it's like someone's got a growing license, no one really cares. Someone's got an extraction facility, You know, there's a lot of like, show me what you can do that's different from the other 60 guys right now.
You know, I think investors have figured out the U.S. is a much larger market and is where Canada was 3 or 4 years ago in terms of, you know, the ability to build up the value of the underlying asset in that market. That's number one. Number two, the investor has figured out that brands is where the value is and where you can defend the value long term, even if the inputs like cannabis prices go down, which I predict that they will, and I think anyone would predict that they will. Yep. That's how you defend your asset base, is you have, you know, real estate in the mind of the consumer that just keeps coming back and buying that brand or that product. So brands has been an area that I think investors have gravitated towards. And then distribution is sort of very closely linked to brands, but the ability to sell somebody a product, whether it's getting on a shelf or being a shelf in some cases, and how you sell that product, and whether it's packaging, manufacturing, those types of aspects, I think are places that investors are focused rightly. And again, what's suffered because of those realizations by investors have been assets that are involved in cultivation or Canadian only assets. You're even starting to see companies delist in Toronto to list in the CSE. In fact, a lot of LPs I think are looking at, and you'll see a trend where they're delisting from Toronto to list in on the CSE so that they can be US or North American based companies. Mm-hmm. And that's because the investor has figured this out. And so, you know, I think those are the key trends that I'm seeing.
I like to look as countries like Germany open up to take the Canadian experience as a roadmap for what they're going to go through over the next few years. And I think the US is sort of one of those countries where, you know, you could say that they're where Canada was back in 2015, and you could sort of figure out where things are going to go if you just sort of look back and learn from the history of the Canadian space. Eventually, the US is going to be the same overregulated, government interfered with mess of rules that Canada is currently, but the opportunities still sit there, and I guess are even earlier in places like Australia and South America. California being such a massive market, obviously there's no need for you to rush off into the rest of the world, but the rest of the world is kind of starting to get interesting. Are you looking over in that direction?
For sure. You're absolutely right that there are places in the world that I think are going to be great cannabis markets. As it relates to Origin House, Cresco, the markets that we're in are just too juicy, frankly, to go and try and restart with new players at the table, new government officials or local parties or counterparties in countries that we're complete strangers to. All of that adds up to why would we spend 1 minute or $1 outside of Ohio or Illinois or California or some of the big dynamic markets in the US. Mm-hmm. and be a nobody in a new market that's earlier stage. So that's the easy part of that response. The part that, you know, I would say that we are keen on doing is finding opportunities in markets. Take Germany, for example, and what went on for the last couple of years in Germany versus what's really happening. So there are 80 plus million people that live in Germany. Generally, I would say people would conclude that they're pretty smart, affluent people that can figure out things for themselves. Mm-hmm. You had this market that started off as being an import-only market where they weren't handing out cultivation licenses, and that provided companies in Canada, Canadian licensed producers, the ability to ship cannabis across the Atlantic Ocean to Germany. And so that was good for that point in time. But if you're telling me that you don't think that Germany can figure out how to cultivate cannabis domestically and make products for themselves and have a domestic market that's thriving and healthy.
Of all countries. Such a rich tradition of efficiency.
Exactly. So you have to be really careful about the bet that I think you're making on some of these international players.
I remember when the Canadian market was in its infancy and Bedrocan Netherlands came out to show us all how it was done, and very quickly got sort of sent back home and have never really been a part of the market in the days since. So I'm guessing you're absolutely right that in a place like Germany, which has no struggle setting up automated systems and design efficiencies, to say, well, we should probably go to Canada and get them to show us how to do this is probably a good 1 month consultancy and then see you later.
Absolutely. Not to mention like just logistics of sending product 5,000 miles across places. Like if it's not Germany, which is never going to happen, it will be Germany or each individual European country, it can be somewhere close enough to Germany that doesn't involve sub-zero temperatures for, a third of the year and 5,000 miles of transportation. So I'm pretty confident that is not for us. Smart people, business people, cultivators, branders, distributors can figure out their own markets pretty handily, I think.
Right.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes, you can do it through Google Play, you can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
So you don't need to be the world leader of all things to all people. You just need to be the leader in your space, in a market that's got an infinite amount of wealth and demand for the product that you can create.
Bingo.
So
I think there are a couple of markets that are interesting in, some of those places that you mentioned. A place like Israel is always going to be interesting to the cannabis sector and other healthcare and life sciences sectors, and for that matter, tech. Because you have, a trained population that has programs and universities and education systems and open markets that interesting things will end up coming out of places like that. So there are some strategic markets. I didn't mean to paint a big brush that Europe isn't of interest or South America isn't of interest. It's just largely what I see in the market is companies chasing after these markets without sort of a long game in mind. Hmm.
I always find John Fowler at Supreme is an interesting cat. He's usually tending to move in directions that are counter to where his competitors are. And when he jumped into the country of Lesotho in Africa, I thought, what the hell is he up to? Now that we're starting to commoditize the price of weed. That seems like a bit of prophecy moving. It's to get out of Canada almost seems like to be the smart move if growing is your business.
Without question. I mean, I see a day that's not too far from now where you start seeing importation into markets like Canada. And other markets, it will be a long time, I think, before the U.S. borders let cannabis imports in. But there are ways to start to see imports come into the Canadian market from places that have physical and environmental, let's call them, advantages, which are never going to go away, either in terms of the cost of production and including the cost of labor. So, you know, I completely agree that the world is shifting around very quickly. Everyone understands how huge the cannabis opportunity is, but smart people on supply chain are starting to figure out that there are solutions that don't involve lighting up, you know, indoor greenhouses in Canada where it's, you know, minus 30 for 3 or 4 months a year.
Right. I remember when we first talked before Canna Royalty was a thing, we had a discussion about this, and it's funny how much of what's happened now was what we talked about, like, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, as being the likely place where the focus will end up. One of those things, one of those topics was the fact that the smoker market, as big as it is when you're talking about an illicit product, it's not so big when you compare it to the natural health product market or the nutraceuticals market. Do you think the long-term strategy with cannabis, or long-term thinking with cannabis, is that we won't actually talk about cannabis very much longer, that it'll just be a ingredient that goes into other things, and that will be where the real money's to be had?
Not that soon. I like thinking about it that way, in terms of how dramatically large a market is where cannabis is combined with virtually everything. So I agree that we go there at some point, but I think in the near term, and by near term for me, that's the next year to 5 years of the cannabis market, that it is a very product and segment and brand driven marketplace, where, you know, it's going to take some time to see cannabis used in across the board in food, and maybe, you know, it requires differentiating CBD from THC. Maybe sure. Guys are starting to already introduce a lot of CBD products, which is what you're seeing. But in the case of broad THC use, including on the medical side or on the food side, I think that's going to require, as it should, a lot more regulation, testing, clinical trials in the case of medical use that are required and that will lengthen out that curve. So largely it will be, let's call it, recreational or wellness driven and not pure medical, where clinical trials show you that you should be taking cannabis over, you know, a pharmaceutical product, for example.
Okay. I got two more questions for you. I'm going to let you get back to what I know is a very busy day. One of which is beverages. There are a lot of varying viewpoints on the validity of cannabis beverages, whether anyone's ever actually going to get them to market, whether they're going to just be something that has a vague amount of CBD in it, or whether it's going to be something that gets you high. What's your viewpoint on the beverage market in the short term? Is it a thing?
Great question. Huge market eventually, but I would put it 2+ years out, maybe longer, before real products end up making any kind of dent in the cannabis market. And, you know, from an investor perspective, which is, I know, you know, a large part of your viewer and follower base is largely investment driven, I would say that things like Constellation's investment into Canopy and Hexo's deal with Molson's, you know, made the investor think, I think, very aggressively about the beverage category. And so you saw a lot of speculation on the investment side around beverage companies. But when you look at the market, and we have a really good view of the world's largest market being California and what's selling, it's not beverages. So you have to sort of unpack that and ask yourself, why is that? One of the reasons is that the manufacturing process for a final beverage involving cannabis and the right dosing is far from complete. Mm-hmm. If some people have the idea that it's easy, that's incorrect. It's not easy to dose a drink in a way that you can combine the solution itself with the proper effect and at the same time have it taste good. That is not easy chemistry. I think a lot of people think it is, but it's really not, and that's part of the reason why it hasn't picked up.
Yeah, I know. One of the difficulties being that the stuff we're talking about is basically oil based, and when you mix oil with water, it doesn't necessarily do that willingly. I know that everyone's looking for what's going to be the Red Bull of cannabis beverages, but people forget that for 8 years or so, Red Bull was a terrible tasting drink that they couldn't sell for love or money before they finally got the solution right and got the penetration. One last question for you. I'm looking at MedMen and their marketing, which I see is very non-related to where they do business. They have 6 or 7 states, but they're marketing on Sirius Radio and in magazines that go across North America. Do you think that there's validity in brand building by marketing to people who can't actually use your product just yet? Or would that be something that you wouldn't actually look towards?
Yeah, there's people way smarter than me in our company that are specialists in branding and ultimately marketing along the lines of what you're talking about. But our approach to date has been to focus on markets that we can currently legally and successfully sell product into. So, the challenge for a company in the cannabis sector right now, especially in the U.S., because Canada, from a marketing perspective, is effectively, paralyzed due to government regulation. But in the case of the U.S., coming back maybe to closing where we started, one of the large value creators of the acquisition and deal between Cresco and Origin House is, we often get asked, how do you build a national brand when you have 50 different states and the inability to manufacture in one place and just transport to another? Mm-hmm. And the answer and part of our combination was, well, when you control your supply chain as one company and you can do as close as possible, given the realities of 50 different states, manufacture and have a consistent product in multiple markets, that's how you do it. And the marketing ends up sort of supporting and tethering your ability to manufacture and distribute that product in those states. And so coming back, I guess, to the answer, it would be only states that we know that we have a great product, we can manufacture it properly, distribute it properly, would be markets that we have an interest in using marketing dollars.
So it's less about educating people to the fact that your product exists and maybe one day, but more about, listen, it's in the store right now, go get it.
Yeah, and we're confident that people travel and they go to Las Vegas where they get our products, or they go to California where they get our products, or they live in Michigan. And that's how you start to, build that national brand in the mind of the consumer who's probably fairly afoot on going to new markets and trying that same product for their own enjoyment as they travel.
For sure. Well, anyone who remembers when Starbucks came to town, we'll have an insight into that sort of building up. Mark, it's
absolutely
one of the great pleasures that I've had in working in this business has been the times that we've had to chat and pontificate about the world, and this is no exception. Thanks very much for your time, and I'm sure we'll talk again in the very near future. If folks want to jump onto Origin House and invest in the Lustig Brain, OH is the symbol on the CSE, at least for the time being. Thanks very much for your time, man.
Appreciate it, Chris. I always appreciate your questions. And I think, to return the compliment, you've done a great job of keeping investors in tune with the cannabis sector, but also in a pretty fun and creative way. I enjoy following you, so appreciate it.
That's going straight into our marketing literature tomorrow.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks, man.
Take care.
Talk soon.
See you, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.